Welcome to the Bonafide Literary Show. You have now been authenticated. Welcome, my book-loving friends. I am Deidre Huey, the eroticist, the author, La Drama Princess. Today, it is something new from me to you. This is episode one, and we're in season four, and I've been buying paperbacks, and I have been reading. You can find all past and new episodes and listen on your own time to get some bonafide literary news, what's new in literature today, and look up some great authors, your faves, and some new ones at the Bonafide Literary Show's exclusive home, www.bonafideliteraryshow.com. To get updates on other podcasts in the Avid Reader Nation network, like Outskirts Science Fiction Theater and The Book Tea with Deidre Huey, visit these podcasts at their exclusive new home on the AvidReaderNation.com website, www.theavidreadernation.com. Never fear, this podcast and Outskirts Science Fiction Theater and The Book Tea are in the App Store on iTunes. Book festival season is coming. You might not have had time to register and organize your trip to a festival this year, but the info is always good to know. The Bay Area Book Festival in San Francisco is open June 6th through 7th, 2015. Visit baybookfest.org for details. Their site also lists many other major book festivals, so that's a definite must-see. Hay Festival is a five-continent theme for books going on all year long. Go to hayfestival.com to see if you can visit as a reader or jump in this thing as an author. Go down to Miami in November for the Miami Book Fair International. This festival is held at the Miami-Dade College, November 15th through the 22nd. The street fair is November 20th through the 22nd, 2015. Edible Book Festival has already gone on by the time I've recorded this episode, but it is so cool. I have to share this with you. Go to www.library.illinois.edu/ediblebooks to see how great it is. Lots of picks there, so you may want to get to planning. That's what I found for you if you want to get out this summer and fall and browse the books at a major event. Get to this list and more on www.bonafideliteraryshow.com. But back to the basic business of this episode. Like I said, I have been reading, finally. Can't say much about writing, but I've been nestled in the pages of some books. These are the top books of May 2015, week one, brought to you by this podcast, The Bonafide Literary Show. Now, these books were not selected because they are new releases or that they appeal to a particular demographic. I'm listing books that I selected to sit down and read for my own pleasure, and I'm giving you some ideas. Hey, maybe something on my list may be interesting to you. Now, these are my 2015 week books, so expect more reads and reviews over the months and new episodes a couple of times a month or so, just like this one. So let's get down to what I read. Oh, and I'm not listing genre because sometimes that can turn a person off. I want to just stick to the story. All right, here goes. Number one on my list is Rudy Peace, and his book was Not My Baby Girl. So Sasha is a biracial child of a probably Tano Puerto Rican father who's a jailbird and an African-American mother who's a druggy prostitute. She's a redhead black girl, chubby, dark-skinned Sasha. She is raised in the Bronx, New York by her hateful grandmother, her father's mother, who's hateful because she's racist, a mother of many, and a grandmother of more. Sasha is raised poor and treated even worse, more so than her socioeconomic status, which is in the gutter, where welfare mothers sell their bodies to nasty deacons for light bill money and a little bit of food to feed their extended family of children bastardized by missing fathers, but they believe they are better than the hookers on the street. Years of abuse, dogged physically, mentally, verbally, and too many promises going absolutely nowhere from her mother, Sasha ends up in the love den of an older boy, his own father, the king of the neighborhood, a drug dealer. This won't be the last time Sasha is turned out. beat by his girlfriend, she goes home to her hateful grandmother and takes more abuse, but not before the disgusting hands of the deacon force her head down to a nasty place where a teenage girl shouldn't be descending. 14 years old and the road is getting rougher. Sasha eventually lands on the track, Hunts Point. Her mother is dead. Sasha is out there at the point helping a friend, being her bodyguard as she jumps in and out of cars with nasty men too old for her. Overweight, young, naive, but growing up too fast, out there she gets turned out yet again. A trick in a car shows her some attention, more than mama ever did, more than grandmother did. Her father, she never knew. He was in and out of the pen her whole childhood that ends officially when she jumps in the car with her first trick. The drugs come into play like they always do for the hookers at the point. The place is famous for it. She makes her way to the island like they all do, if they don't end up dead first. Rikers Island. She spends 5 months in jail, lusting after a pimp. Saint is the young guy wearing Tim's and selling her dreams of security. She's always chasing, wanting to be loved, needing the adrenaline to keep her feeling good. It comes from the drugs, from the threat of life's end right on the point. He doesn't want to take her, but what could he do? She officially chose him. It takes pimp knowledge of game to understand. If he wouldn't, someone else surely would. Like so many pimps, he has a conscience. So he thinks. She's too young. It's not too late, but soon it is. Time is ticking. She's not Sasha anymore. It's baby girl now. She chose this life. With all the determination of a stubborn, hard-headed child, Sasha forced herself into his stable of women of the night. She's in love with Saint, a manipulator for love she never got all her life. Some strange kind of thing. She had him in her hand soon. Changed him into what he thought he would never be. Broke the law of the street. Things had changed. Feeling that rush, she was out the gate. Who's in charge now? Whatever she could do, she took the risk. Money was his main goal. What was hers? She was worse for the world. Sasha is a speeding train running off the rails. Rudy Peace Is Not My Baby Girl is an interesting story. It's not Scarface retold for it to be a book based on the streets. And it's not the rewriting of Donald Goins for the 5 millionth time. I haven't read anything like it. It's great if you need a change of tie in your reading pile, but I'm an emotional person. I like a lot of emotion in the books I read. For me, there's not enough internal dialogue, yet I feel that if there were some, that would bog down the story. The story started off slow for me, but not to the point of complete frustration. Nope, not that at all. It took about 25 chapters to see some real foreshadowing and for the title of the book to come together with the significance in Sasha's life. And that's one thing good about the book. The chapters are relatively short, about 10 pages, I guess, reading in ebook format. So you will reach chapter 25 pretty fast. One of my favorite things about the book is the dialogue. Rudy gets it right. I have read my share of urban books. Well, I try to read them, and they usually don't get it right with a smooth flow of dialogue. Rudy doesn't bog you down with a lot of slang. There isn't a bunch of name brand glorification. It's all simple and to the point. When the Latino grandmother speaks, I always read it in an accent. That's a great thing to me because I come into the story more that way. This is a very useful device that Rudy Peace has used, letting your dialogue provide authenticity to invite you into the world of the story and the characters surrounding and the way of life. This is a book that involves pimping. There's nothing glorified about it. It's kind of an odd book. I appreciate that it's not glorified, but it's not scary enough to make you run from it either. It's unique in that it's almost just a relationship story. Some of the things in this book bewildered me, but not really. Everyone has their own reality, but I have never understood a relationship like this in the pimp game. Well, I guess I have. It kind of reminds me of the Mac, but not really. There isn't much game in this book coming from the pimp in charge. Sasha isn't the average hoe, but she is. What's new about what she desires out of life emotionally as a hoe? Nothing to me. Then there's the thing of Sasha's core. She is just as dead as ever on the inside. At least that's what I can get out of her from what was written. I don't feel anything about her. I don't feel sad for her or wish her dead. It's just life on the point she's living. That's Hunt's point. She's just another hooker on the point. I wasn't impressed with her. I had a hard time connecting. That's just me, though. To an average person who's naive and new to such lifestyles as far as studying them, Sasha would be someone impressive and very damaged and scary. But this is all stuff Sasha learned. No one cared about her as a child. It's like the abused turning into the abuser. I don't know if people she met were soft batch cookies or what the hell was going on. I guess I needed more feelings from Sasha. Like I said before, more internal dialogue. Should one expect that from a hoe who ended up on the point? The hoes on the point I have studied, I feel the same about them. I find them void of feeling, but that can't be true, is it? Everyone has feelings, but why don't these women show it? There's a lot of robotic actions. Wake up, get high, hit the track, get high, hop in and out of cars, get high, wander the track all night, get high, pass out, wake up, do it all again. For me, this story needed Sasha telling it herself. Unlike documentaries or movies, books allow you to get deeper into the story of the character. Remember I said she's just another hoe on the point. Sasha isn't a hoe that needs a pimp for the reasons we all believe. There's a dull pain always throbbing in this girl's head, but not her heart. She's not only the abused turned abuser, she seeks the abuse and the control of getting it. She's a flip-flop submissive dominated, and that will never work. You either are or you aren't. So you see how this could go, right? Everything in baby girl's life as a child is what she's stuck in as an adult. She is like a baby in the most innocent way you could think of her. She has what, like the dead child of Sete and Beloved who came back to wreck her life. She was needy and violent for attention and love that was ripped from her. Yet she was sexual and irresistible, but in a funny, wobbly, unpretty, sorrowful, primitive way. This is what I liked about this book. It's not all very obvious. The book goes along smoothly at a tempered pace. By the time you're getting to the end, you figure it out. Then you realize you didn't know anything about baby girl. Is this Rudy Peace's way of teaching us the pain of an abused child lost and turning out or getting turned out on Hunt's point? I like to believe so. In the end, I wish that baby girl was never born. No one deserves her life. Not my baby girl reaffirms my belief that some people just don't need to go there if they are not ready for children. Sasha didn't even have to happen for this kind of crap. But for every person who is handed this type of life, Sasha has known there's a way and there's a better way. The second book I read for my top books of May 2015 week one list is Cynthia D. Hunter's Diary of a Crack Addict's Wife. Right away, this story has all the makings of a Azora Banks and a Franklin Swift. Shit is good in the beginning, but you see that mud sliding down the hill really fast. C is a working woman who dresses nicely and she has a nice body. Her stepsister's husband introduces her to a man one day while she's walking home from work. She said he was so fine, he looked like he stepped right out of GQ magazine. But for some reason, her brother-in-law warned her this man didn't need to meet her as they're hanging out in the middle of the afternoon on a work day. Mark tells C he works on Wall Street. Charming, and he does and says everything right. Don't they all right before they're about to tear your world down? Diary of a Crack Addict's Wife is set in 1985. C and Mark move fast. He moves in within 10 days. In less than a month, he is out of work for stealing toilet paper, he says. And what do you know? She believes him. Women, I tell you, we are so forgiving and blind to everything we don't want to see make sense. 25-year-old C has a 7-year-old son, but she puts all her hopes and dreams into Mark. Her son lives with her aunt temporarily. All C can see is getting that ring. Mark to commit to buying her the house she's renting, and a twisted truth in his makeshift fairy tale, then the bottom drops out. Never takes long, does it? A month later, experimentation, she said. It couldn't be he was smoked out. He was just trying something. He isn't really into it, she said. Cracked vials on the floor everywhere. Raccoon eyes and dazed minds. But C has a secret. All the signs are there, but she keeps knocking them down like whack-a-mole. If he has 2 jobs, how come he never goes in to at least one? At least we never see him go in. Fairy tales don't feed mouths. By page 31, I was screaming at the book. My thoughts. This bitch is very stupid. Does this motherfucker even have a job? How many excuses can you make? 3-day crack binges and your head is in the cloud on some fantasy about your life with him. This fool man is begging for money he just gave you for bills. Clearly, there is no light bulb in your head, let alone one to turn on. Jeez. This is where the book picks up for me. One thing I don't like, though, is all the speaking to the reader crap. I know it's supposed to be inspirational, but it breaks me out of the story too much. I am a drama hound. Hello, La Drama Princess. Duh. To me, nothing is inspirational about the story, only if she gets a brain cell worth using and gets out of there with this bum. That is something that is shown through action of events, not motivational speaking. Sometimes you have to see to feel. This is just one of those books. Let me tell you. It's one thing to be in a relationship with a piece of crap, but don't drag that mess out. One thing she says throughout the book is that it doesn't get any better. And she told the truth. It doesn't. Learn from the experience, never forget it, and move on. It doesn't matter if you had a child by them. If anything, that should be even more reason to stop dragging the inevitable out and leave. But I digress. If there is one thing a person could learn from Diary of a Crack Addict's Wife, it is that if someone tells you they have been where or through what you're going through and it's not going to work out, you should probably listen to them. The only things that change are the names of the characters. The story is still the same. The characters all act the same. It's going to end up the same way. Not much about life is unique. You have some unique people, but in certain situations, we all are the same people. This book gives you that. This is why I like this book. I wanted to read something real. I got this from Diary of a Crack Addict's Wife. Nothing was glamorized. Sometimes you just need an honest story about real lives. You know, stories like this make you appreciate wisdom. But I have to say, this is another book in which the main character could have gone a long way in making me her friend. I did understand some of her issues being a woman trying to love a man, but I grew very tired of certain things. This book does have a surprise ending. I would suggest it to anyone who has a newly found redemption in getting out of a relationship with an addict. For anyone else, you would probably like it for some good shake your head moments and definitely a what not to do. Number 3 on my top books of May week 1 list is Misha Barnett's Cat Skinner's book. Cat Skinner's book is good. It starts off good. There's a great flow with the book. If you look through past episodes of Outskirts Science Fiction Theater podcast on the Avid Reader Nation G2 network, you will find him reading We Pass From View, which he wrote. Misha is good. When I started off this book, I had been in a bind, in a slump. I was angry about what I had been reading. I was running out of time to get this episode pulled together. I've even complained on Facebook about lack of interesting reading material that could capture and hold my attention. Misha replied to me. He sent me this book. Now, this isn't a paid review, or is it requested? He didn't even know I was working on this episode, so he was taking a chance mentioning this book to me, sending it to me, and I was taking one reading it. Like I said, I was pretty disappointed by some other books. Wasting my money. I opened this book after immediately uploading it to my tablet. Cat Skinner's book starts off easy. James works at an electrical supply store or hardware store off on some random street in the city. Nothing special, but there was something more to it I could tell right away. James had to have something going on with him because his surroundings are so normal and average. A dusty home improvement store. Big whoop about that. James is an average looking guy with some funny things about his appearance. We've all seen someone like him before. Short, not attractive, but a little odd. He's very odd. There's something within him, something that his boss Victor, who owns the store, uses him for. James works for Victor at night on a second job. Cat Skinner makes James's tattoo have feeling to it, an electric feeling. Cat Skinner is fast, clean, and deadly. James is average. Where James goes, Cat Skinner is too, all the time, everywhere. If not for Cat Skinner, James wouldn't be an asset for Victor, the man with the black teeth, nasty yellow skin, who sits in an ice-cold office in the back of the store. The hardware store where you can get electrical supplies isn't run by the mundane guy who just happens to know a lot about a little of nothing electrical. And this store doesn't keep stock, and James doesn't keep humanism inside of him. Misha Barnett gets right into the story from the first page. You don't feel bored reading his work, and you don't worry when the next thing will happen. I can't stress enough how important this is when I'm reading a book, and I think it's true for most of us. We want something that is going to keep us in another world for a good piece of time. We don't want it to end too soon, but we can't wait to get to the end. Misha does this. Misha describes this as an urban fantasy science fiction like you've never read before. And I have to agree. Cat Skinner's book wasn't heavy with too many descriptions or crowded with characters that you don't care about because they don't have anything to do with the story. Misha didn't take too long of a time giving us the scenic route. He took us right through busy downtown where everything was jumping and everywhere you look, you saw something interesting. For me, it's not the genre of book that seals the deal or whether it will entertain me. Me, I just need something that grabs me, makes sense, makes me care about it, and keeps me coming back to finish. You can get Misha Barnett's book from the usual book websites online. It's also in audiobook format, and Cynthia D. Hunter's book is available on lots of online outlets as well. Rudy Peace's Baby Girl is a hard find if you're looking elsewhere of Amazon. And I would love to see him write and publish more books. This isn't my last review episode on the Bonafide Literary Show podcast. Look for more this season. Next episode is another installment of What Every Author Should Know. Catch me here next week with author interview tips. I hope you have enjoyed this episode. Leave a review and tell me what you think of the improvements I've made and, of course, the content. If you have any suggestions or requests for future episodes, go to www.bonafideliteraryshow.com or www.theavidreadernation.com and fill out a contact form to drop me a note. Have a great rest of the week. I am Deidre Huey, the eroticist and author, LaDramaPrincess, LaDramaPrincess.com.